Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Brighton Rock Podcast. Here with me, Peter Marsh, today is Russell Guyver, as usual.
Hello.
And welcome back, Richard Holberton, as well. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Peter.
And today, we have something wondrous to talk about. Albion won a game.
We can actually discuss
on this podcast an Albion win. So shall we jump straight to it then? Seeing as there's not much else that is worth talking about in the world, we'll be not allowed out.
Exactly.
Anyone got any initial thoughts on Leeds they'd like to share?
Well, I probably don't share quite your euphoria, because I know you celebrate victories over Leeds more than anyone else, Peter. But as we were saying before we started this broadcast, it's a pleasure waking up on a Sunday morning knowing that you've got 3 points under your belt, because it hasn't happened for a while and it doesn't happen frequently enough. What did I think? Yeah, I mean, I think I said on the before the Wolves game, I said that was a must win. I know it was a January fixture and they're not really must wins in January, but it was getting close to that point. And obviously we didn't win that. In fact, we're grateful for a draw in the end. So, I think there was plenty of pleasing stuff to talk about in the performance itself, collectively and from certain individuals. But the biggest thing is just the 3 points itself. I think the boost that you get as a fan and hopefully from the players from a win, I think is the main thing. And given not necessarily the run of form recently, but the run of results, I think it was really, really important to get a win in the bag. So yeah, very pleasing.
Yeah.
Yep. Agree completely. Yeah. I think the 3 points was the most important thing by far, irrelevant of any performance or whatever. And Russ, what's your thoughts?
Oh, I was gutted, obviously. Really, really wanted to lose someone. No, it's fantastic, isn't it? Can I just say the ridiculously childlike grin on your face, Peter, is truly delicious.
I have no idea what you mean. I've literally no idea.
He looks like an Aardman character. He's just got this huge, cheesy grin. It's great, isn't it? I mean, apparently that's 5 wins in 6 at Elland Road. It's the first win in January in the Premier League, apparently. So we got that monkey off our back as well. What I loved about it was the fact that, A, we held on to a lead for once, which we've only done on the occasions that we've won the games, isn't it, the previous times, which haven't been that many. And we've won a game in January, and we've kept up a brilliant record against Leeds. And we've won a game at an absolutely vital stage, because it was getting ever more desperate, wasn't it, off the run of, was it 9 games without a win? Mm-hmm. We were desperate. It was only a matter of time before we slipped into the relegation zone, because we weren't going to get away with just drawing our way to safety. So given Fulham have a couple of games in hand, I don't know when they're playing them, but it was going to get hairy. So it was a very timely win, and I'm absolutely delighted. And the other thing I was pleased with was we'll get into it in more detail probably later, the game management, which relates obviously to not conceding the lead. Mm-hmm. We looked like we handled that situation over quite a long period, wasn't it, because we scored in the 17th minute. I think throughout the game, a couple of scares aside, we handled it pretty well, particularly in the final stages. Davy Proper in particular, just he killed time beautifully with his hold up play, which was great. So those were my extras.
I agree with all of that. I think we should probably come on to individuals at some point, because I thought there were some very noteworthy, outstanding performances individually. But I think you're right, Russell. As a collective, I think it showed signs of, Potter and the team having done the homework on it and set up a kind of very savvy game plan, I think. And we kind of managed the game pretty much from start to finish very well, but including the last few minutes. Leeds are, I think, the fifth highest scorers in the division, and have conceded more goals than only one other team, I think I'm right in saying. So, you know, they're quite a front foot free scoring team, or they try to be anyway. So I think trying to set up to go toe to toe with them on their terms for 90 minutes was never going to work. But equally, being entirely defensive and trying to hit them on the break wasn't going to work either. So I think, you know, it looked like a very well managed hybrid between the two, in that, you know, sat back when it was necessary to, let them have the ball when it was the right thing to do, but picked our moments to attack very, very well. And there was never a point in the game when I thought we were, I mean, there was a few points when they looked threatening a bit in the second half, but they never really converted that into clear-cut chances. And there was certainly never a point when we were under siege or anything like it. So I think, you know, managing the game and controlling the game was, as a unit, was really, really pleasing to see.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think we did what we haven't done in recent weeks, and that was defended solidly. We kind of held on when we needed to. There were some moments when we were under pressure, but not like concerted pressure, but kind of in our box defending, and we dealt with it, and Leeds didn't really seem to know how to break us down. I think it's interesting because Leeds obviously has a record without Calvin Phillips, apparently, as they've lost every game without him in the Premier League this season, which obviously is a bit of a, on the one hand, a bit of a kind of shows that, you know, they missed him a lot, and also they missed their keeper, although I don't think the keeper made any mistakes particularly, and also they were missing two centre-halves as well. But then we were missing Lamptey, we were missing Welbeck, Connolly might have made a difference as well, you know, if Leeds were pushing forward.
Lallana as well. Yeah.
And one very surprising name from the starting line, who I still cannot quite understand why he wasn't started, even though obviously it worked in the end. Bissouma, who I still don't quite understand why he didn't start the game. And I'll hold my hands up. And before the game, I was very surprised by the selection. I thought it was very odd to not play your, what I would say, been our best player this season.
You weren't the only one who was surprised by that, Peter. I was as well. Not least because he might have been one of our better players throughout the season, but also because he was suspended for the Man City game. And therefore, you'd think would be fresher. And bear in mind, it was the third away game in a week.
And also to not play him and play a centre half and a attacking midfielder as your centre midfield too, Seabod as well.
Yeah, I mean, the surprise to me was the absence of Bissouma and the inclusion of Gross, probably. But I'm eating a bit of humble pie on that, because I think for the game plan that we had set up, I think Gross fitted in very well, and he's a sort of understated player at the best of times, but does the things that make a team tick, but that you don't always notice particularly. But I thought he actually had a really good game, I thought, on Saturday.
Yeah.
And having, you know, watching him in previous games, he's not the quickest, and he's not extravagantly skillful either, but he's got a very, very good football brain, and he spots opportunities very quickly, and he spots danger very quickly as well. And you can see him, if we lose the ball upfield, he'll either plug the gap himself if someone else is out of position, or make sure someone else does that so that the danger is sort of stemmed. And I think, you know, we could talk about the goal, but I think his role in the goal, which was only a little flick on to White, but it took at least one Leeds defender out of the picture, maybe two, if you're generous. And it all stemmed from there. So, I thought the selection was a bit odd from that perspective, but you're always vindicated when you win, right? So,
yeah, absolutely. If he went and selected the youth 11 and we went and won, then I think most people would be pretty happy, and they wouldn't really, even if they were a bit confused before the game. But yeah, I mean, overall, I thought it worked very well. I mean, we're going to start talking about individual players. I thought McAllister had his arguably best game for us. He was brilliant. And I think the goal was down to his, you know, kind of I thought initially he was going to shoot or pass wide, and I think most of Leeds defended as well. And then he passed it into Trossard, completely wrong footing them, and kind of like took about two or three of them out of the game there as well. And that was where the goal came from. And Trossard, to be fair, did well as well, controlled it and played back to him. And obviously the cross and the finish were both relatively easy, I'd say, from there. Yeah. But it was the interchange there that kind of opened Leeds up.
I thought it was a really, really well created goal. I mean, people rave about goals when somebody smashes it into the top corner from 30 yards out, but that was, you know, a move involving six players from well inside our own half, and just picked them apart, and it ended up with a, you know, a tap into a completely unguarded net from your main striker from 3 yards out. So It was great. It was,
I prefer goals
very,
like
very
that.
Well, very well composed.
I prefer goals like that to the long range one. I voted for Izquierdo's goal at Stoke over his one against West Ham at home in that first season up, because I just, the interchange for that goal at Stoke, and I think this one was quite similar in a way, was just brilliant. Whereas, yes, it was a brilliant shot against West Ham he scored, and yes, goals like Jahanbakhsh's one last season are amazing goals, but they, there's not an element of fluke on it, but it's certainly, you can do that a lot of times and not score, and just miss it or whatever. Whereas the interchange and the passing was so crisp in that move, especially considering the pitch as well, which was horrendous.
Yeah, the pitch was dreadful. And I think I said before, I thought we played an intelligent game throughout, and that the goal was a sort of microcosm of it, in that, Trossard took up a very smart position in the middle of that move. Morpé's movement, even before he got the ball, was kind of important in, I can't remember who their nearest defender was, but he was nowhere near him by the time he got the ball. Good. Very good goal.
I think it was Click was the defender. I'm not sure was though, it? But I'd echo what you said, Peter. I was going to make the same point actually. I prefer, and I voted for that same Stoke goal that you were talking about in that season too, over his other one, because it was a very similar goal, wasn't it? It was just incisive, crisp, direct, immediate. It put them on the back foot, didn't give them a chance to set themselves. Started right in our, pretty much on the edge of our area, wasn't it? It was a burn header, a sort of a defensive flick over an opponent by March. One touch with his left foot from Grosch, as we mentioned. And then obviously you got the 1-2 scenario with McAllister and Trossard. So pretty pleased with that. Trossard seems to be developing a run of games and a run of good games. Now, if you take out the cup match, McAllister the same. I think it was his best game as well, Richard. I agree with you on that. And Morpé, for all the criticism, and some of it justified. I think his touch could be better. Certain elements could be better. Obviously, he suffered with confidence issues. But for all of that, he's got 7 goals now this season. He's on course to beat last season's record of 10, which we were pleased with. Part of that is the fact I think we are creating more chances. So the fact we squandered the number of chances we had is relative to that. But overall, that was a terrific goal. If you play with that degree of crispness and immediacy and interactivity and movements, you are going to put any team on the back foot. And as it proved...
I don't know why we don't do it more often, actually. We do have a lot of the time just ponder, potter around and, think about it and then wait for the other team to get back when we're trying to counterattack, whereas that was actually incisive. And a couple of other occasions we were as well, when we actually tried to actually attack when teams had a few players forward.
Yeah.
I wonder a bit whether Leeds' style of play allowed us to do that a little bit, in that they play quite aggressively, they leave themselves open a lot, and you can exploit the space when it presents itself to play like that.
I think that's
maybe that helped a bit. One player we didn't talk about, or we talked about his role in the goal, was Ben White, but I thought he had an interesting that he chose Leeds as the opponent to do it, but I thought he had a really, really good game. I thought his distribution was really good. His positional play was very good. Obviously, he had a big role in the goal itself.
Yeah, sorry, I missed him out, didn't I, when I was describing it?
We all did.
He received the ball from Grosch, of course.
I thought he was very good. And also without the ball, there seems to be numerous times in the first half particularly where, we seem to be able to shepherd them into up blind alleys, really, and get the ball off them a lot. White wasn't the only person instrumental in that, but he had a part in it. I thought, all round, both with the ball and without, I thought in that position he was very good.
I think sometimes, not always, but sometimes, if the movement and the build-up play is good enough, you can end up in a position where you've got Morpé's got a tap in, he's in acres of space, he's completely unmarked. Some of that you could put down to criticism of the defence, but part of it is, as you said, the movement in the build-up to the goal, the cleverness, the way he moved, where he deceived the defender into where he thought he was going to be.
That's the pass. It was the fact that they were expecting a shot or a ball out wide, and he just completely run foot of them with that ball into... And they probably weren't too worried about a ball out wide or a shot, because they had it covered.
Yeah.
And suddenly to play in the Trossard and then make that run...
I couldn't have produced the movement involved, but I certainly could have scored the goal that he scored. But he's fully deserving of that goal, because he is the one that did create the space for that.
And also, you say about Mopé, I think... he is literally the definition of a confidence player. His goals at Albion have all come in runs. They've not come here, you know, a goal every three games. They've come four games in a row, and we scored and then not scored for like eight games or something like that. He is the definition of a confidence strike. So the fact that he hopefully has started to get confidence back now and is scoring is hopefully only be a good thing for us. Someone else I'd like to mention as well is who I thought had, again, arguably his best game for us. And I think it's, you know, really actually, I think it's been pretty good generally, is Veltman, who I thought was in the second half behind a number of our attacks, as well as being very solid defensively. He was behind a number of our attacks and kind of was, if you watch Match of the Day afterwards as well, it reminded me how many of them he was involved in breaking up play and kind of crossing it or passing it across. And he looks, you can see, I mean, I think it'd be a real shame when everyone's fit if he's not a regular in the team anyway. But I mean, the problem is, where does he fit in? Just, if White plays midfield, then you've got a load of players like Proper and Alzate who miss out. If he plays right back, then Lamptey's not playing. If he plays centre back, then one of Webster, White and Dunk have got to miss out. So it's a very good, you know, issue to have, I suppose, in the sense, especially with a quite a busy second half of the season. But
yeah, I was about to say the same thing. In a way, it's a nice problem to have. And I think, you know, you take all three games from last week in the round. I think one of the pleasing things was that people that might not necessarily get as much playing time stake to claim for themselves. I mean, McAllister, we've talked about particularly, and I thought, you know, he was outstanding against Leeds and pretty good in the other games as well.
That's the interesting
one. Veltman was very solid, as you said. Percy Tau, I mean, it wasn't that great against Leeds. He didn't come on for very long, but you know, it's good that the players who've sort of been a little bit on the fringes of the squad have been given playing time and acquitted themselves really well.
So those two are doing well. What happens then exactly? We've got Tau on the bench. What happens when Lallana's back? What happens when Welbeck's back? If Bissouma comes in for Grosch, where does Grosch fit in? You know, it's kind of Proper as well as started, you know, looking actually back to his best the last couple of weeks. It's actually a bit of competition suddenly.
Yeah, and the other two players that we haven't mentioned were Dunk and Webster, who I thought both were, you know, in saying that we weren't under sustained pressure for any long period of the game, and I don't think we were. But on the occasions when Leeds got balls in the box or, you know, got into threatening positions, defensively, I thought they were both rock solid and actually Webster in an attacking sense as well, brought the ball out very capably a few times. You know, a couple of little heart in the mouth moments when he overran it a bit, but you know, it showed intent, and it more often than not, it led to, you know, something good happening. And he had that shot in the second half. I thought both of them had really good games.
Yeah, and actually, to be fair to him, given his struggles recently, Dan Burn, I thought, did pretty well as well. I think he showed that, played in a proper position, a centre half within a three, he doesn't do a decent job. Whereas if he's left at left back or left wing back, he's going to struggle, because especially against a winger like Traore or someone with real pace. But against Leeds, I thought he played pretty well as well. He was solid enough.
Yeah, agreed. And I think it was all round it was a good performance. I do agree, Webster driving forward. Andy Kay likes that, doesn't he? That element of his game, Webster. He really did. I mean, he was very Lawrence-esque in a couple of moments in that match. Dunk, the header back to the goalie, this time finds its man where it didn't against City. Just the things just click together. Dunk's looking better in general. I think individually and collectively, they all play pretty well.
Half those two goals helped Dunk.
I think they did.
He struggled a bit this season generally.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just there's lots of positives to be had from that. We don't want to get overexcited because ultimately it's one win after a lot of times not winning. But it has, you know, it has at least given us an air of confidence, an air of hope and brightness into the life at the moment, doesn't it? And it's weird how it transitions things, because now we've got Fulham next in terms of league games, at least. Suddenly that looks like a more winnable game off the back of what we've just done. I know there's no guarantees here, but if we can win that match, we go not only onto a run of two wins for the first time this season, but we also, you know, we can then propel ourselves confidence wise. And I think, you know, this could be the turning point for us. It feels to me as if there was a lot more in the tank. We hadn't fulfilled our potential this season. In the run up to this match, I was strangely confident on match day, to the tune of me putting quite a few bets in, mainly on scores that didn't come up. It's pretty much every winning score you could think of apart from bloody 1-0. But anyway, I did have Morpay first scorer £10 and last scorer £10. So, I ended up about 110 quid in profit on that, off the back of that. Because I felt he would score. I felt he was in a hit and miss phase in terms of his confidence, but he liked scoring against them. He likes playing against them. Obviously, as soon as I saw he was in the starting lineup, that was, I put the money on. I just thought that he was due one. I fancied him for this match. He's somebody, and this is what was annoying about the Arsenal game, really, so much. I fancied him to score then as well. At least in this occasion, we've got the point, we've got their points, we've got the win. And I think we've set ourselves up nicely now, and we just need to build on that going forwards.
I think good points. And I think given our points total before the game and previous results, I think we would all have accepted a win by hook or by crook, and it didn't really matter how. But the fact that the win was achieved with a very good performance, and everybody who played was at least solid, and in some cases a lot better than that, does, and other, you know, as we said, fringe players contributed as well. That gives me confidence that it's a springboard to move on and push on, rather than a fluky win that we don't repeat.
I mean, I think there's this big picture, isn't there, going on, where we've got a very large squad, we're rotating a lot of people, there's quite a lot we're trying to do here. It's a bit ambitious to keep turning things around as much as we are, but I think if we can get through this season and the early part of next season as a Premier League club, I think we will bear the fruits of all that labour, because I think we will then have a number of players who've got used to playing with each other. At the moment, those partnerships are not really developing because we're not playing them enough together. But I think over time, everyone will be used to playing with each other, to the point where we'll have a really slickly functioning outfit where people can slip in and out and play with whoever, and it will be fine. That's the way I could see it going. The other thing was to mention about the points. Yeah, if we can beat Fulham, we go on to 20 points from 20 games, which is 1 point per game. Andy Kay has mentioned before on previous podcasts on here that he thinks it'll be a lower points total for survival this season. I'm inclined to agree with him. But even if it isn't, if you stick to the point per game thing, you're safe. And that puts us back on track with some winnable games in February to come. So that's a positive as well.
We'll haul in a few as well. I mean, we might even conceivably go above Newcastle in that process. Yeah. I still think they may well be the ones looking at the way they're playing at the moment.
Yeah.
They do seem to get nick wins when they desperately need them, but at the moment they look dreadful, and Bruce is under a lot of pressure.
He's looking ever more under pressure, isn't he? The weird thing is as well, because the weekend started with the West Brom game, it looked like it was going to be a very different kind of weekend for a while, didn't it? Because they got an unexpected win. They were 1-0 up, they went 2-1 down, you think, relax, and then they win it 3-2, and you think, great, that's not a good start. However, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it worked out not a bad weekend, because that was the only result that went against us.
And Fulham, a key player for our game next week. And yeah, a couple of other games as well.
Getting suspended, yeah.
Yeah, West Brom winning was really the only blemish on it. I mean, Fulham lost, Burnley lost. And as Sheffield you said earlier, lost.
Palace got thrashed. Can we mention that?
Yeah, we can.
Leeds lost, and of course Wolves lost by losing to West Brom. So ironically, maybe if we are on to a better second half of season, maybe that's actually a good result for us.
I don't see Wolves going down, I think they'll be okay.
But to your point earlier, Peter, I thought for a while that Newcastle might well get dragged into it, and they don't look like a happy ship at the moment, or don't sound like a happy ship at the moment, and their results are very poor lately. I wouldn't be surprised to see them being hauled into the relegation struggle.
And the more we can haul into it, the better. I mean, the more chance. Because it looked like not a couple of weeks ago that maybe Burnley would pull clear and end up being, well, probably one from two to go down, with West Brom and Sheffield United probably dropping, and it's one between us and Fulham. But now we're above Burnley. We've got Newcastle in relatively close. You know, it's actually looking a lot more hopeful now.
Yeah, speaking of bets, I put a bet on prior to the weekend. For Sheffield United, West Brom and Newcastle to go down. Because looking at the demeanour of the manager, the general ambience around the players on and off the pitch, from what I've seen, I haven't watched their games live, but just from bits and pieces, bits of live games and mainly highlights, I think they look like everything about them looks like a club in trouble. And with a whole half a season still to go, They've got every bit the reason to worry about the, what's coming ahead. Because Fulham are, what, five behind us. We're two behind Newcastle, 7-point gap, is that right? And yeah. Fulham have got the games in hand. I mean,
Newcastle,
even if they just got a...
Well, they're playing at Villa at the weekend.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So if Fulham, say, for example, match one result against the game in hand against Newcastle and manage to win the other one, which, say, for example, the Villa game, suddenly that looks very, very real, doesn't it? Things could twist the other way in an instant, of course. We realise that. But no, I mean, everything about them doesn't look good at the moment. And
a lot for Fulham, I think, depends on them getting a striker as well. I mean, their current system involves Mitrovic not playing, really, and he's by far their best striker, but he's not mobile enough. So they've been playing Caballero, and he missed a really good chance at the weekend.
He did, didn't he?
0-0, which, if they'd taken at that point, Chelsea have not been on great form recently. They could easily have gone on to win the game, or at least get a draw. But because he's their main striker, and he's not really a main striker, they played him there for his pace. He's not really going to score the goals necessarily to keep them up. So if they need, like I still think we could do with a really out and out striker with the pace that they've got, but they don't come cheap. No one seems to be offering them up for free, you know, or for cheap deals.
Yeah, and actually that Caballero chance reminded me of the ghost of recent past for the Albion there. I mean, it was very much it's probably more sharply incisive attacker, in fact, but the miss itself, you think, just the ball comes at him, you've got to take it quickly, you've got to hit it, and
it wasn't that just, far was... away from being a similar position from where Trossard missed at the weekend, which still could have come to haunt us. The one where it's a bit of a different move, but it was the actual position and the it was as good a chance. They were both pretty good chances, and
I must
admit, at that point, I could see us conceding and it being the same old story. We didn't take our chances to go 2-0, and then
yeah, it could have been. On the matter of the match, actually, the goal was 17 minutes, for anyone that doesn't know. So it's a nice and early in the game, which, again, I think is the key to us. We scored very early against Newcastle on the way to winning that one. Can't remember in the other game how early we scored.
Quite early as well. And
yeah.
Then pulled it back just after half-time. Villa was about 15, something like that. Well, basically.
Yeah. So that's interesting, isn't it? But also, I mean, it was... It just... difficult to say, really, but I just think we started in the right manner and then we settled into our stride. The pitch wasn't great, we have to say that. They've had some pretty bad weather up there. Lots of rain, lots of snow, lots of frost, all sorts of stuff. It looked very long, the grass, which I know can be a counteractive measure for frosty weather. But it looked like it was cut up badly, which didn't help either team, to be honest. However, we came out on top, which I was pleased with. I have to say, honorary mention to Trossard as having a major part to play in yet another strike on the crossbar, which came after the goal. I can't remember when it was in the first half.
Was it like maybe 10 minutes afterwards?
It was. Yeah. It was pretty soon after, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Would have been nice.
It was an attempted sort of flash cross across goal. It was interesting. If that hadn't taken the deflection, I think it came off Ayling and went onto the bar, didn't it, and then went to safety. But if it hadn't have come off Ayling, it looked like it was going towards the other Leeds defender before it would have got anywhere near Morpay. But it was coming with such force. I wonder if a ball may have broken loose there. We could have possibly scored with it. But it's good to notch up another tick on our crossbar challenge. I mean, how many have we hit so far? Is it about 10 now?
I mean, it's five on Man U alone, wasn't it? So...
Yeah, we had two against Fulham, was it? One or two against Fulham?
One against Fulham.
Villa, was there one against Villa, maybe? Can't remember now.
Anyway, there's definitely been other incidents. I'm trying to think when else, but...
Yeah. But going on stats just quickly as well, I mean, Leeds had 67% of the possession. In terms of the shots, though, seven each, two each on target, so pretty even and that's on that score. They had more corners and we conceded slightly more fouls. But overall, I think, I'm not quite sure, I'd have to check it, but I think we tend to have less possession when we've won this season, which is interesting.
Yeah, I think we do. And the interesting thing is, despite those stats sounding quite even, on the expected goal stat, we had about, I think it was like they had 0.24 and we had 1.4 or something like that. So we obviously had the better chances, you know, the Trossard one, the one that hit the bar in the end, Trossard in the second half, the other ones when we kind of actually... We looked quite dangerous second half, and that's where I thought Veltman was really good, actually, because I think in a lot of ways we've lost a bit of attacking impetus without Lamptey, but actually on Saturday I thought he got down the wing. He's obviously not got the pace of of Lamptey, but he got forward quite well and offered quite a lot up going forward there.
Yeah. Just two other things from me quickly. First of all, for anyone listening to this, you'll already know the result. But as we record this, West Ham are winning 1-0 against West Brom in the Premier League just after half-time with a first-half goal. So that's good news. So far, so good.
Must be another point. It was 45+1, I think, or something. So the goal.
Yeah. Oh, right at the end of the half. Right. And the other thing was just going back to a point which Richard alluded to regarding our game at the weekend, about space afforded to the Albion. I mean, there's been a lot of comments in and outside of the club at Leeds saying that was one of their poorest performances of the season and this, that and the other. And I'm sure that probably is true. But I think part of the reason why it was is the fact that Calvin Phillips is missing. Now, that for me was the other reason that I haven't mentioned that I was so supremely confident about us winning the game, because I think he's pivotal for them. I think he's vital. I think despite everything we love about Ben White, I do actually think that Phillips was even more important than White last season for them. And this season, he's been vital. The only three, four games, all of them have been with Phillips absent from the team. Even with him in the team, they are, yeah, that's right. Yeah, all the games he's been missing, they've lost. I think they've lost some other games as well. But essentially, him being in there is essential to them getting a result. They're vulnerable. They play a gung-ho style and they rely on him being the pivot as a defensive midfielder. When he's not there, it leaves a huge gap. And trying to play any version of the style they normally like to play is vastly weakened by him not being in that position. Even when he's there, they can be hit on the break, which is why they've got so many high scoring games and they get thrashed or they thrash other teams. That's the way they play. Without him there, I don't think they're comfortable as much playing in a different system, and they're not as comfortable playing the same system without him. So that's why I felt so confident. And you could see shades of the good Leeds, couldn't you? They like to play sort of mid-range balls forward, get a really good first touch on it in a wide position and try and go very directly from there. But I think when you double up on them, you can negate that a little bit. And knowing that you've got that threat on the break as well, I think those elements together are why they probably played a more cagey game, a less confident game, and why we were able to beat them.
I also think, I think that was one of the areas that Brighton managed pretty well, and as I said, there was a period in second half where they had some threatening positions and they looked as if they might be able to carve out chances, but we managed to either turn them away from a direct route to goal or get enough numbers back to nullify the threat, and as a result they didn't. I mean, I think they had one shot which was narrowly wide, but I can't remember them other than that. I don't really remember them having any very, very clear-cut chances. And I think, the way we defended further out was a big part of the reason for that. And a lot, White was one of the players involved in that, but there were others as well. And to your earlier point, Russell, I think, the way we managed the game in the last 5 or 10 minutes was very composed. Good contrast to the Newport game, where we didn't manage the game very well at the end.
The slight frustration I had at the end was that I thought, for his 20 minutes, Percy Tau didn't really get in the game. I know he's kind of quite isolated, but when you've just come on a sub, you should be chasing everything and running after everything. And a few times he gave the ball away and didn't really chase after it, in my view.
He made a couple of questionable decisions late in the game where he ended up.
I thought when he actually controlled it and took it off and went to the side of the defender, and then that was when the referee blew his whistle.
Mm. Yeah, but I think taking last week's three games as a whole, I think his appearance is a good sign. He's quick, he's direct, he's willing to take people on.
Gives us something different. He didn't have his best
time against Leeds.
Further back, so I'm not particularly a criticism. It's just the ball didn't. You need in that situation someone the ball to stick to them, and it didn't really stick to him. It kind of like just bounced off him quite a lot.
Yeah. 1-1 now, guys. How annoying. Anyway, just a point on White, actually, because obviously there's a lot of focus on him because he was on loan to Leeds last season. I mean, there's after the result, there was a lot of people posting a tweet of a picture of White with just like a cheeky smirk on his face, which was actually taken pre-match in the warm-up just before kickoff, which was used as a wry riposte to Leeds fans online, which was quite amusing. But I thought he had a good game. He got forward. He was adventurous. He went on one bursting run and had a shot charged down. But he was getting forward. He certainly, there was no accusations of him being in split loyalties at all. Not that I would imagine he would. But he did pretty well as well, didn't he? And I thought it was a good positive performance from him as well. He had the involvement in the goal, as you said, and I thought that was a good element. But I agree with you about Percy Tau. Yeah, he didn't really get his foot in this one. Maybe against Fulham, we'll see.
Or first of all, Blackpool.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, we've got that first, of course, coming up. Richard's got to go shortly, so I don't know, firstly, Richard, if you've got any further thoughts or reflections on the game or what's coming up next?
Not really on the game. I'll leave you guys to talk about the Blackpool game if that's what you're going to do next. But I think. I don't know what the prognosis is for the players who are injured at the moment. But it'd be quite interesting to see what Team Potter picks for the cup game if others are coming back from injury. I don't know whether that's too soon for them. But it may be that we see some people who wouldn't normally play in an early rounds cup game but do because they're coming back from injury. That's one possibility, but I'll certainly be intrigued to see who he picks.
I wonder if Glenn Murray is actually available. Technically, he might be. I don't know if he played for Watford.
Has he been cut short then? Because I heard he was talking about moving somewhere else, but I haven't actually seen that he's actually cut his loan short.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. And what's the cut-off for cutting it short? Who knows? Who knows? You just don't have any idea really what's going to happen with Potter selections in general, but especially for the Cups. But anyway, on that note, Richard, I know you've got to go before we break for our half-time interval with the score still 1-1 in the West Ham-West Brom game. Fingers crossed for the rest of that one. Thanks for joining us, Richard. We'll hope to see you soon.
Always a pleasure, especially when we've won.
Oh, yeah. Isn't it great? What a great feeling. And you've got a cheesy grin as well, I hasten to add, which is good to see. We all have, haven't we? Yeah. So we'll break for half time there. So thanks to Richard and Peter, and I will be back in just a moment. Cheers for now. So welcome back to part two of this latest episode. We are now without Richard. He's had to leave us, but it is still Peter and I. And we're just going to go through a few bits of brief football news in a moment. First of all, some notices. We'd like to say thank you very much to Alan, who we mentioned 3 or 4 weeks ago. He's got back in touch to say how much he enjoyed the Brian Houghton episode that we've had on recently. And it brought back quite a few good memories for him from previous times supporting the club. Similarly, with Malcolm, a friend of mine, aka Cheshire, as he's known to some online, he's been in touch as well, saying pretty similar. And also Phil Breeze, who is both a regular listener to the show and also a regular member of Seagulls Over London. So hello to all of you. Thank you again to all of you for getting in touch. Please keep listening, and we really love hearing from you as well. In sadder news this week, we've been hearing that Sol Bamba, unfortunately, has been diagnosed with cancer. Former Cardiff City player in his more recent playing times, and very recently he's been a pundit with Sky Sports on their news channel, amongst other things. But we wish him the very best. Also to Steve Cotterill, who is a one-time Albion player. He's been a manager for quite some time in more recent era. Latterly of Shrewsbury, he's been manager there and has overseen a really good turnaround in their fortunes in the last few weeks. However, he's caught COVID. He was admitted to an ICU unit in hospital, but is apparently stable and recovering now. So we wish him well also. In lighter news, probably not for the player concerned, but for us just reporting on it, Lionel Messi has got his first club level red card in his entire career. Barca are appealing it, but he was sent off in what I think was a defeat for them against Athletic Bilbao the other day. Interesting, he did get sent off twice at international level, including on his debut for Argentina, but that's the first time he's been sent off at club level. In other South American-based news,
I've been watching the Copa America, where there's been some interesting matchups. It's been not always the case, but it is this year that it was the two big boy nations coming up against each other in both semis, with River Plate taking on Palmeiras. My friend Ronaldo, a Brazilian, is a fan of theirs. Hello to you if you're listening, Ronaldo. The other one was between Santos and Boca Juniors. In the first legs, River were beaten 3-0 at home by Palmeiras. But in a really exciting second leg, River managed to win 2-0 in Brazil to really take it to the wire. And apparently there was some controversy around the game. I didn't catch the second leg, unfortunately, on that one. But in the end, Palmeiras prevailed 3-2 on aggregate. The one I did watch in more detail was the Boca-Santos game. The first leg at the Bombonero in Argentina was 0-0. The second leg ended up being a comfortable win for Santos, 3-0. Soteldo, with the goal, the middle goal of those three, being particularly impressive, a cracking effort from him.
And Santos, I watched the second leg of their game. Absolute chaos. Apparently the usual tricks, fireworks near the hotel the night before, all of those shenanigans going on. There was a huge number of people congregated outside the stadium before the match, which obviously is ridiculous and so stupid. And then as the teams have finished warming up and started getting ready to kick off the game, the second leg, fireworks were there. There were cutaways to shots of fireworks having landed on the pitch, one somewhere near the dugout and one in the middle of the pitch. So there's scenes of the referee trying to kick this firework off that he couldn't stamp out initially. And then it cuts to a shot of another firework sailing in on a mini parachute, so which explains how the other fireworks got in as well. What are these guys doing? It's crazy. Obviously, it's all intimidation tactics. Or
I think we have some slightly crazy fans over here, and then you read about stuff like that, and you think it's not even close, are we? We're all wimps over here.
Yeah, absolutely mad. Really, really crazy stuff. You know, it's going to ultimately, the crux of the matter is it's going to be an all-Brazilian final between Palmeiras and Santos. That's going to be covered on BBC, on their iPlayer service. So I'll be checking that out. It's some good football there. The play acting is embarrassing, but there's some really good plays. Soteldo's goal for Santos is the middle goal in their 3-0 win in the second leg as they swept the opposition aside to qualify after the goalless first leg. Was particularly impressive, but
there were literally stuff. Fireworks on the night. Yeah,
exactly that. Yeah, so that was good. Any other bits of news you picked up, Peter, from the week?
I mean, I suppose the main things are the Albion side, aren't they? So Bernardo's obviously gone to Salzburg on loan, which I'm a bit mixed feelings about because I kind of think we haven't seen the best of him. Potter's obviously decided he isn't quite the right fit for him for whatever reason. I thought he looked really good the first season he was here under Newton when given the chance. And I was disappointed last season he didn't get more opportunities. But, I mean, they've got to trust Potter if they're going to, seemingly they're going to keep him. So they've got to kind of trust him. And he's obviously decided that he'd rather play. So the alternative side is Karpovnik has come in after being a signing in the summer, but being sent back on loan to Legia also in the summer, has now started signed permanently or come in permanently ahead of when he would have come in the summer. So he is the light-for-light replacement for Bernardo and one that Potter's more likely to play, hopefully.
Yeah, I was hearing rumours that he might be going out, Bernardo, and I was anxious about it because I thought, well, if we get rid of him, yeah, ready-made player for the team, we've got to then bring someone else in. And it turns out that the season-long loan, as you said, Karpovnik has been cut short, so it was an option available to us. I guess that makes sense now, doesn't it? One in, one out. Gyökeres, confirmation he has gone to Coventry for the second half of the season on loan.
He had so few games as Swansea, been to Coventry.
Yeah, and young player of the year last season was Warren O'Hara, defender for us with the youth team. He's now confirmed as gone on an undisclosed fee, for an undisclosed fee, to MK Dons, Brighton fan. Former youth player himself, Russell Martin, of course, in charge at MK Dons. That's probably a good move because, I mean, to be honest with you, it's going to be very difficult for him to break past what we've got in our squad, isn't it?
Since he was young player of the year last year, we brought in, obviously, White's come back anyway and Veltman's come in. But then further down, we've brought in Dendonka, we've brought in Van Hek as well, who are, you know, he's playing in the Dutch first division at the moment. Robert's obviously playing in the second division, League One over here. Clark is playing in the Championship. Ostergaard's playing in the Championship. There's a lot of centre halves around at our level, you know. And yeah, I think he probably wasn't going to get a game. And yeah, it's a good move. Hopefully, we've got a decent fee, and we've also got a sell-on clause. Most importantly, because you know, kind of, if he does make it back up again, we then get a percentage. So yeah, good luck to him. I think probably it's the right thing. Give him some games, and it's encouraging that, you know, even if players don't make it, they'll get a decent career. Whereas the old days, that used to be loaned out to, you know, kind of like the Sussex County League at one point, and then oblivion. You know, it's kind of, you know.
Yeah, it literally was that, wasn't it, before? And I do think, yeah, it pays its way. As long as it pays its way, everything's good, isn't it? With the
academy. Someone like Alzate to go on and become the player that he looks like he will, to pay off an awful lot of failures, even if they don't do that well. Even if they do cost a million or two, if Alzate goes on to become half the player he was, or Malumbi, or, you know, players like that. Millwall have already had a club record fee turned down for Malumbi, apparently, before he went on loan to Preston. You know, I mean, I think midfield, if anything, is stronger now than central defence. If we do end up signing this Moses Caicedo or whatever, we'll have him, we'll have Modair, we'll have Sanders, Malumbi, both Jenks and... Weir were on the bench at Man City. Jenks was again at the weekend. You know, they've got the development squad's really looking strong at the moment, and it's only obviously a good thing for the first team. A, if we go down, that players have got experience lower down and have a chance to play there. And B, if we stay up, well, they get money for them, or they'll come and be really good for us, hopefully.
Yeah, and the other thing is that in terms of those youth players, either we're going to have them and get the benefit of them in the Premier League, or we get them in the Championship, and if whichever division we're in, we've got a scenario we can apply according to where we are. The other thing is with someone like Ben White, when someone like him comes through, it's brilliant, because either we stay in the Premier League and we sell him to a premium club, we're going to get a massive profit, or we stay in the Premier League and we keep him and he does well for us, or we get relegated and we sell him. Either way round, we're either going to get the benefit of the player, and or we're going to get the sell on at some point down the line.
But why? I'm assuming, based on the fact I think he was released by Southampton, there's no sell on as well. So, you know, whereas some, like, there might be a sell on clause in there, because obviously you pick them up as a young player and they look at the selling club asked for a sell on clause. I don't know what, say, someone like Alzate with Orient, if, whether that's the case or not. But as an example, with White having been released, I'm assuming there's no way of having a sell on clause. So that's really positive as well, that we get all the money that we get for him.
Yeah, that's probably the case. And you mentioned Malumbi. I'm not sure actually we mentioned on the podcast before that he went on loan to Preston for the season, but he has done. One person who will be playing alongside, quite slightly confusingly, is Ben Whiteman, who's a player who is at Doncaster, who I really rate. I think he's a really good player. And of course, an Albion player, Taylor Richards, is also on loan at Doncaster. But Ben Whiteman, he's been signed by Preston. He's a really good prospect. He's a goal-scoring attacking midfielder. He scores goals from range. One to keep an eye on in general. I really kind of like the idea of assigning him longer term, just purely for the confusion factor, having Ben White and Ben Whiteman in the same team. That we look on with interest to see how both Malumbi and Gyökeres do. But also, you know, good luck to Warren Uhura with his full-time career now with MK Dons.
This can only help in terms of getting other players in that side of things, you know, in kind of future reference. You know, players know that even if they don't quite make it here, they'll get the grounding and the ways of working, that even if they end up having a career in League One, that's still a decent career for a footballer.
Yeah.
And then they can maybe build themselves up in a couple of years and maybe get higher.
That's right. I was listening to the Totally Football League podcast the other day, and they mentioned us quite a bit on there. They were talking about Sanchez, the loans, and how there's opportunities for players who could then potentially apply their trade in the Premier League, as Sanchez is currently doing with us. And there was complimentary talk about Ben White, and there was talk about Uhura going to MK Dons. I think it all paints us in a good light. And I think, you know,
that's one of the reasons why I've not fully got into the Potter outcome camp. I was siding towards it. And if anything, I was on the side of the fence where I felt possibly before Saturday he was looking, if anything, it was probably time to go if we weren't getting a striker. But I was never fully in that, but because I think he has given young players a chance. And he has really kind of developed some of these players, and which is why I find it really funny that Bernardo didn't, because on the face of it, he was a young player with real potential. Yeah. And it's funny that he hasn't developed under him, whereas like Bissouma obviously has, you know, White's obviously developed a bit more this season. I think Lamptey has massively since he joined. Alzate did last season. Connolly, I think, has developed, even if he's not quite the finished article yet, and maybe not quite from an equality. You know, players like Sanchez obviously has improved since he's come in and had another game at the weekend. So, you know, it's a good
start. I know the finances are a more all-encompassing thing, but if you look at it just in isolation, if Warren Ahora goes for £200,000 or £300,000 or something, I don't have no idea what we took in fee for him. But any of that, the fee, whatever it is, goes towards the upkeep and the running costs of the academy. And if you can make clear profits by selling a couple of players who are very good but not good enough for where we are now, that justifies it. And if we're in the Championship, we use them more.
You look at what we pay for Webster, and you think then Clark's had two seasons or year and a half so far at Derby, and done really well there. So, I mean, Webster obviously went for 20 million, so we probably wouldn't get that much for him. But, you know, people, you know, if we did want to sell him to a Championship team, we decided he wasn't going to be Premier League quality next season, we'd probably get a lot more than our 4 million, I think it was, we paid Portsmouth now. You know, we're probably looking at... Hmm. You know, 7, 8, 9, 10 million, or whatever, based on what championship proven players have gone for.
Yeah, and I mean that's the other thing, isn't it? I think has Clark come back because Derby have got some cash flow issues.
There's been rumours around that he might be returning, but nothing.
Yeah, I read somewhere about that. I don't know if there's anything in that, but I could say he'll just go out on loan somewhere else. It's not going to feature for us, but
I mean, it's hard to see, unless someone like Byrne was to go in search of first team football, it's hard to see Clark technically be sixth choice, and he's not like he can play anywhere else. I don't think
he's
adept at wing back or anything.
One other thing on peripheral Albion squad members, Shane Duffy. I think I read somewhere the other day that Celtic are saying they're going to keep him for the rest of the season. They were reiterating. So interesting, given all the criticism that he's been subject to. From various quarters, particularly in the fan base side of things. That's interesting. It suits us, of course, because we're going to have him out on loan one way or the other anyway, aren't we? So it might as well be.
Next season, because he's far too good, frankly, to play for Celtic and be like a reserve at Celtic. He's far too good to be in a Championship, but then will we want to play him for, to take him, sell him to a Premier League club? And is he...
I could see him playing for Burnley. Can you in either division?
Yeah, but then would Burnley want him? I mean, they've got some pretty good centre-halves themselves. I mean, I'm not sure convinced he'd be above Tarkowski and me. Especially if Tarkowski was sold. But then even then, they'd probably spend more money, especially with their takeover being complete. It's an interesting one. I feel a bit sorry for him because he was such a big part of our first two seasons, but he seems to have lost his way a bit, kind of. And yeah, it's obviously not gone as he dreamed at Celtic. He obviously wanted to go to Celtic and get the record 10 in a row and be a key part of that, and then... You know, try and find a way of either signing permanently or going somewhere else. But it's obviously, you know, as we all know, players get scapegoated, and it sounds like Duffy has been scapegoated by Celtic. He's not been perfect, but he's not been as bad as a lot of the supporters have said, I think.
So that about wraps it up for this episode of the pod. Next up, football wise, is Blackpool at the weekend. We've been drawn at home to the lower league side at the Amex in the FA Cup this weekend, and it's going to be a rare outing against them. We've only played, surprisingly, 30 games against them in our head-to-head history. And curiously, the stats are rather even. 10 wins, 10 draws and 10 defeats. So who's going to get the edge after this weekend? What we do know is that our most recent games against them were a bore draw at home and a really miserable 1-0 defeat away, uncharacteristically for the season we were having at the time, a few years ago in the Championship. A more memorable game from the Championship in 2013 was the 6-1 thrashing we administered over them at the Amex in that season, when the playoffs were pretty much imminent by that stage as we were cruising towards them. And what happened in those playoffs in 2013, of course, we won't mention here. The other thing that I wanted to just flag up is that we have a very special half-term report episode coming up next. It's going to be with, making his second appearance, BBC Radio Sussex commentator Johnny Cantor, to give us his opinions on the Albion's first half of season, how he thinks we've done, what he thinks we've done well, what he thinks we've done badly, who stood out for him, and what his views are on the likelihood of success relative to our position in the second half of the season. So stay tuned for that one. Until then, stand or fall, up the Albion.
Hello. We're going to do a quick bit of stoppage time because just after recording, a couple of interesting bits of information. First of all, Newport Peter, tell us what's happened at Newport's game at Cheltenham today.
So it looks like, from what I've seen on one clip, that the Newport goalkeeper has scored from his own 6-yard box with a just a kind of a kick forward as normal, and it kind of like bounced awkwardly and flown over the Cheltenham keeper's head in his top of their game tonight. So yeah,
Tim, what are the odds on that? Brilliant. You've got to love it. King's the guy, isn't it, who scored the goal. He
also saved 2 or 3 penalties against us.
It's
landed, to be fair. He's managed to kick it, from looking at the clip, he's managed to kick it, so it landed pretty much on the edge of the opposing area, which is a pretty long kick anyway. And it just seems to have taken off, and the keeper's slightly further forward than he might be. And he's, regretted it.
Brilliant. And the other bit we wanted to join back in for was to tell you, you will know this by the time you're listening already anyway, but nonetheless, I'm going to tell you, West Ham 2, West Brom 1.
Yeah, great result.
Bowen, injury time in the first half, Bowen scored. Bloody Pereira again, 51 minutes for West Brom.
Quite a few for West Brom.
And it's Mr. Antonio, actually, there's something I wanted to say about him. He scored the winner on 66 minutes. I love you, Mr. Antonio. You are one of my favourite footballers, not only because you've scored a crucial goal against West Brom to help further our cause, but also, did you hear what Tammy said about Zaha and Grealish this week?
relating to players who maybe don't stay on their feet very much.
Yeah, he said something like he was doing a backstroke gesture, which I thought looked a bit naff, actually, to be honest. But when I heard the background of it, he was quoted as saying something along the lines of, Zaha and Grealish seem to be treating football pitches like swimming pools. So I thought I'd do a tribute to them.
The reference to our favourite players as well in the process.
I know. If he'd have had a dig at Leeds, he would have been the ideal man there, wouldn't he, really? It was brilliant. Well done, Michael Antonio. Well done to West Ham. And well done to the Newport goalie. Right, we're signing off officially now. Until the next one, Peter. Once again, we say, stand or fall?
Up the Albion.
Sports Social Podcast Network.